Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done everything. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. It is Thursday. Preseason football is here. Kind of crept up on us. Like I was saying, the PGA Tour like crept on, the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was a 12-game slate
tonight. Full slate of games.
Which is awesome. We're going to break down some of those. The NCAA has some rule changes, I think, that are a good thing. We're going to get a little bit closer to a better system for college and high school athletes, which I think is a good thing. Before we get to the NFL, we're also going to do a Last Chance U bonus podcast. So everybody make sure you check out that. We'll have it out by noon today. So that's going to be pretty fun, too, because we were both dialed into that show and have been a huge fan of it. Before we get to the preseason football, I mentioned the other day that the Mark Wahlberg challenge, I was trying to take him up on it. So he's waking up at 4 a.m. and he's working out. He's calling out everybody. He's doing 47 days because he's 47 years old, right? I asked you, I'm like, how much sleep do you think he gets? So I did a little research, right? I think there's a couple things. One, he's on the West Coast. So he lives on the East Coast, but he goes to the West Coast. Like, I get up at 4 a.m. They're like, it's nothing.
Yeah, you're fine.
Like,
it's 7 a.m.
So that's kind of cheating when you do that. The other thing is, I saw him yesterday. He's getting in his hyperbaric chamber to take like a 2 or 3 hour nap in the middle of the day. Like, that makes things a lot easier when you get to go just take chill. And he's like listening to Adele to take his, you know, mid-afternoon
nap.
Yeah,
he gets his zen moments.
You don't have those luxuries when you got three kids running around. I'm trying to get 20 minutes if I'm lucky.
Indeed. So, indeed. So you're tapping out of the Breakfast Club is what you're saying? I mean that all boils down to
bags under my eyes. I'm all dehydrated. Like, I'm tired. So I might have to adjust my 47-day challenge just a little bit. All right. So we see it off the top, the 12-game slate for the NFL preseason. I honestly, like, full disclosure,
I don't care. Correct.
I don't pay attention too much to the NFL preseason, but there are some compelling storylines where I feel so starved for football, can't wait for it to come around, that I'll actually tune in and watch some tonight. I actually will because let's start off with the Browns-Giants. Like, this one has some really good – you have the number one versus number two pick, and Baker Mayfield and Saquon Barkley going head-to-head. You've got the Browns, which have kind of sucked me in because of Hard Knocks. And, you know, when you're 0-16, there is something compelling about watching them to see what happens. How are they going to be? And then you've got the Giants, who have a new head coach. They're the team I played for, so I'm obviously a little bit, going to watch them a little bit closer. So this is a game where I'll actually be tuned in. I'll actually watch a little bit. I'll watch when these guys play, because they'll play the first half, and then I'm done.
I will too, and it's crazy that the Browns, like, when was the last time people cared about the Browns? Like, seriously, but they have some they got a little bit of interest drummed up there. I mean, Hard Knocks doesn't hurt. You know, I'm looking for storylines too, and you've got number 1 and number 2 picks, and both fill huge like voids in what that team had last year. I mean, in theory, but they got Tyrod Taylor in Cleveland to help out as well. They were an anemic passing offense last year. The numbers are, they were 22nd in the league at 201 passing yards a game, like 30th in the league in yards per attempt. Like, so, you know, you're bringing in two new quarterbacks to address that situation. I'd love to see what Baker looks like. I want to see how the speed of the game affects him early. They're anticipating him playing two quarters, so that's a good look at him.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be careful too when you check out the preseason. If you just tune in the next day and you see some of the stats, it can be misleading, because you have to remember Baker Mayfield is going to play against a lot of backups.
Yeah, sure.
And he's going to play
vanilla schemes,
vanilla defenses, all that. So I like to actually watch body language. I like to watch their face. I like to watch their confidence, their composure in these situations. So that's what I watch. When I watch younger quarterbacks play, it's more about just kind of seeing how they handle the magnitude of the situation.
Sure.
Because we've seen quarterback after quarterback after quarterback have monster preseason games and then not even make the squad.
Like, yeah.
It's so misleading.
I'm not looking for numbers, I guess. I'm not like – and Saquon, in terms of like helping with the Russian offense.
Yeah.
Giants last year was really, really bad.
Yep.
I'm not looking for pure numbers, but in the preseason, as a player, I want to see an attitude. I want to see you carry yourself like this is yours. I'm supposed to be here with like a swag, a cachet about yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see the deer in headlights look. And whether it translates into like, you know, 250 yards passing or it doesn't, it's irrelevant to me at that point. Like, to your point about you know, preseason. I played against Michael Jordan in the preseason 1 year at Penn State.
Uh-huh.
I had 21 points. Like, I thought I was going to – like, I thought I was an MVP candidate next year. Like, I barely got on the court. You know what I mean? Right. The next time we saw him in the regular season, like, I didn't touch the ball. So, they're two different animals. But I want to see someone who's, like, really chomping at the bit to get out there and have that swag. And I want to – your it's kind of body language. I want to see you carry yourself. Yep. I want to see you act like a pro.
The most important thing that teams do in the preseason is evaluate the bottom half of their roster. It's the guys like you and I were that were trying to make the team. That's who they're trying to go, like, from 35 to 53. They're filling that back end of the roster, the part that's going to churn. There are some quarterback position battles that you'll see unfold in the preseason because you never know how a guy's going to do when there's live, you know, tackling because you can't get that in practice.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's the bottom tier of the roster. Another game that I'm interested in watching, and this is for different reasons, obviously, because you have an established quarterback, is the Colts versus Seahawks.
And you've said don't play
him. I say don't play him. Because when I watch, I'll be like every single Colts fan that's out there.
Holding your breath.
They'll be saying, oh, my gosh, did he get up? Did he get up? Did he move after this one? And the same thing, if it's the Seahawks who they're playing, if Russell Wilson, he won't. Now, he'll probably play a series, maybe, you know, just very sparingly, which most starting established quarterbacks do.
Right.
But even if he's out there, I'm thinking the same thing. I would not play my franchise quarterback in the preseason to risk it. It's not worth it.
I guess my question is, and this is a question for you because I have no idea, why play anybody a series? If you're telling me you're going to play Andrew Luck a quarter, and he gets his first series under his belt, sea legs under him a little bit, maybe he finds a little bit of rhythm.
He'll play one to two series, yeah.
But why play anyone one series? Like, what is the point in that? What can you accomplish in one friggin' series?
Well, the whole philosophy of the preseason is to get you ramped up so that you're ready for week one, right? I mean, that's stating the obvious. So they start you baby steps, one to two series. Then the second game, you might play into the second quarter. The third game is when you're kind of peak preseason. So you'll play the entire first half and a little bit of the third quarter, and then the fourth game you kind of take off so that you're ready for week one.
But what, like, the I feel you. Like, one series, just don't play him.
Right.
Like, roll him out
all
when he's ready to play.
One hit for him to get hurt, and you'll see a lot of starters won't play,
right?
And they want to find out if he can take the hit. I've said this a zillion times. If you want to, what would you rather have? Would you rather have Andrew Luck, you know, a little bit rusty week one because he hasn't played in a couple years, and it takes him a little bit in the regular season? Or would you rather not have him at all?
Yeah, I'm with you on
that.
Pretty
serious. I think it's a pretty easy answer.
I'm with you.
You'd rather have him a little bit rusty than, oh, hey, we saw him take a hit. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm a little bit curious, too, to watch the Seahawks, too, with Russell Wilson. This is his team. It is completely different look on defense. It's going to be totally revamped. Do you think they're going to be bad, the Seahawks?
I don't think they're going to be very good.
I think they'll be all right. I don't think they'll be bad because I think Russell Wilson is that good. And look what he did last year. He carried so much of their team. But I don't think they're Super Bowl contenders.
Right.
And that's the expectation that Pete Carroll has set now on that team. And
yeah, I don't expect them to do that necessarily. But for some reason, I feel like they're going to be worse than you think they're going to be. But I don't know why.
No, it's fine. All right. This one, another game. Texans versus the Chiefs. I don't think there's a quarterback... There's two quarterbacks that I'm watching that I think have a tremendous amount of pressure on them for entirely different reasons. Kirk Cousins with the Vikings because he had the big payday and he's got his first time. He's getting really where a franchise believes in him. The other one is Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
He has been given the keys to a Lamborghini. Like, it is, here you go. But it's like giving a 16-year-old who just got his license the keys to a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
How does that work out? Sometimes he goes out there, gets five tickets. Maybe it's a bad wreck, something like... It is not going to be smooth. He's not going to go just out there and cruise around at, you know, at 95, 100 miles an hour and everything goes perfect. It's going to be a rocky ride, and I'm curious to see how he handles it. I hope he does. He's a great kid. He's got, you know, an amazing arm, but there's going to be some bumps in the road, and you had the exact opposite of him at quarterback for the last few years, and it got you to the playoffs, and it wasn't enough.
Right.
Andy Reid is saying, I want something different.
So you imagine Andy Reid cuts him loose? I mean, because I would say my initial reaction would be like, Andy Reid needs to manage the situation, right? Like, you could take some of that pressure off by managing what you're asking him to do. But the whole reason you have him there is to do some of the things that Alex Smith didn't do.
Right.
Which means you then got to cut him loose to see the arm and stuff. So... That's going to be interesting for me to see how Andy approaches.
Well, he's going to cut him loose, and everybody's going to love about it. Don't forget, last year through about five or six games, Alex Smith was an MVP candidate.
Right.
And everybody's saying, look at all these big plays. Look at, they're taking these shots to the end zone. And they were. And then, you know, you get in the flow of the season. He starts reverting back to being a little bit more conservative. But when you are conservative, and I'm not saying super check down guy, but when you're smart with the football, you can win a lot of games if you have good talent around you. And if you're not, it's really simple. Because, you know, as much as we analyze the game of football, it does a lot of times boil down to who protects the football, who doesn't make the foolish mistakes.
Right.
And he's going to make some foolish interceptions, Patrick Mahomes is. The question I have is how many is it going to cost them games? And is it going to cost them an opportunity to the playoffs? Because if it does, then you're like, well, what'd we make the change for? Just to have a sexy offense and we're not winning games? And that's, to me, where it gets pretty interesting if that's the case.
I feel like Kirk Cousins has a similar situation too, though. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of, I mean, he's not the 16-year-old,
right,
but maybe like the 22-year-old.
Oh,
he
yeah.
some money and he bought himself a
absolutely.
Lamborghini. Because that team's ready to go too, right?
He absolutely is.
Yeah, that's another.
He's had driving experience.
Right.
And he showed he's got some flash to him. And now he gets to get in and have some fun. I think Kirk Cousins is going to tear it up. Like, I feel pretty good about him just because he's been there. We can have all these expectations until you've been there and done it. Look, I'm still not sold on Jimmy Garoppolo because he only did it for 5 games. I need to see him do it for 16. Like, you really have to prove it over the course of time. One little nugget that came out of training camp I thought was interesting. So Patrick Mahomes, who's a gunslinger, threw a lot of interceptions early in camp. Andy Reid was asked about it in the media, and he's like, well, you want to be careful. You want to take your shots, and you don't want to be that check down guy.
Ooh.
And it was totally a backhanded just diss at Alex Smith, who was left behind. So it was interesting to see. So that'll be a fun quarterback play out. And Deshaun Watson is not expected to play, which is the smart move for Bill O'Brien, especially coming off the ACL. Don't play these dudes.
How do you imagine Lamar looks in round 2?
Who's that?
Lamar Jackson.
Oh, he's going to be all right.
Yeah, better?
It's going to be a process. Yeah, he's got to get comfortable. You know, he's got to get comfortable within the system. So,
did he look nervous week one?
No, I think the game looked a little fast to me, and it looked like he was a little bit overwhelmed with just take a breath, like let it go. But you still saw some glimpses of his athleticism for sure.
All right, let's get into the next segment called Read and React. So the top NBA matchups, obviously, they started to leak the schedule yesterday. So we've got opening night Sixers at Celtics. Thunder at Warriors. Those are two intriguing matchups for various reasons. And then the Lakers, their feature games were released. So you got October 18th at the Blazers. That's their opener. October 20th at home versus the Rockets. That's their home opener. And then both Christmas Day and MLK Day, they've got the Warriors.
Man, we talk a lot about the Tiger effect in golf. I mean, look how much the focus is on LeBron. And it should be. But he is the driver of the NBA. And there's some big-time superstars. But those are the games that I'll be compelled to watch. Like, it really will be. I want to see the Sixers, a young team who's going to be, you know, one of the top teams of the East. I want to see what it looks like. And how do they fare against the Celtics early in the season? But to me, it's more about LeBron and every single, because he's going to be much more on the cusp of making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot more positioning. Where is he? Are they on? Are they in? Are they out? Whereas opposed to when he was in Cleveland, it was, well, there's never going to be a doubt. They're going to make the playoffs. So there's going to be much more investment in the regular season in LeBron, which I think is a good thing for the NBA.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're going to be a solid playoff team, though. I think they're going to surprise some people with the pieces that they put around LeBron. Not the young ones, but the vets that have been, you know, talking
all
about
these dudes.
Yeah, I do. I think they're going to be able to figure it out for a year and put a product out there that's going to surprise some people. And these are storylines too, like the Sixers Celtics. Obviously, you're getting Gordon Hayward back and Kyrie, and the Sixers you would think should take that next step because they've got these young like on the cusp type of stars. But when you subtract shooting from today's NBA game, guys like Markel Fultz, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, that space just disappears. And the league is all about space now. You have to have the opportunity to make those moves. So I don't think that they will have the type of year that Philly fans want them to have. Thunder Warriors, obvious reasons. Russ is going bananas.
LeBron going back to Cleveland. I think
that's the one. That's the one I want
to
see.
You are. So you really.
But only to see how Cleveland reacts to him coming back. Like what type of reception he gets. Not just from the fans, but like from the arena staff. From the front office, like from Dan Gilbert and Nate Forbes, the managing partners of the Cavs. I want to see what the reception looks like for LeBron when he comes.
Don't you think it'll be warm welcome, video tribute?
I hope so.
Hey, every rousing ovation.
I hope so.
Except from Dan Gilbert. Like that's the only one I'm like, it might be icy. I'm sure he plays it right because he's seen how bad it can go if you don't, you know.
I don't even know if he can help himself. Like seriously, like I know I've met him numerous times and I know. Nice enough dude, but I don't know if he can help himself in those type of situations. Like, chip on the shoulder at all times guy. Anyway, let's keep it moving. So the Raiders apparently, and this is interesting to me because we have this debate all the time about guys holding out. Yeah. So the Raiders, after giving their offensive tackle Donald Penn, he held out last year for 26 days. Their general manager Reggie McKenzie said at the time that he wouldn't negotiate with the player not in camp. So he comes back, and between weeks 1 and 2, he's given a 2-year, $21 million extension, and they're now asking him to take a pay cut 1 year into the deal.
Are you kidding? Yeah, are you right? No, I'm not giving back any of my money. I think it's interesting because when you hear these reports, first of all, I'd be ticked that it got out there. Like, how does this get out there? Who leaked it? Who had the information? Is it his agent? Is it somebody? Is it Khalil Mack? Like, does he have some aspect of this where he's getting it out there to try to put some pressure on the Raiders? I'm curious to see what it means, like the pay cut. Because a lot of times when you hear pay cut, it sounds really bad, but they're just going to restructure your deal. They'll right. give you a little bit more money up front, and they'll tax them on the back end. It's really a salary cap trick. But it is interesting that Donald Penn was not happy about this, and he was ticked off that it came out there. But it's part of the game. And the teams that have the most success in the NFL, in large part, a lot of times it doesn't get talked about a whole lot, are the teams that handle the cap the best, that have the space. And it's similar to the NBA. Like, that's why the Warriors are doing so great right now, is because they have all this space, and they've handled it, yeah. they've drafted well. A lot of times that's what it comes down to. And if you're Donald Penn, I think – he's reacted. His reaction is what I think the fans' reaction. But I think if you delve deeper into it, I don't think it's as blatant as, hey, you're not going to make as much money. It's just restructured money, which is hard to comprehend. It's hard to explain. But that, in my mind, because they're not going to ask him to take less. Like, you're not going to make as much. To me, it's going to be funneled differently.
I really – so I – there are times when I laugh at NFL players when they're talking about like the NBA money and stuff like that. It's kind of funny to me. But then in situations like this, it becomes very real. Like, yeah. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a guy. And I got what you're saying, that they're not going to just take him to a 50% pay cut or anything right. like that. But the uncertainty of like knowing that at any given time what you've already agreed to play for can be taken away from you just because, it's got to be like a terrifying thing. I could never perform under those circumstances. I just couldn't. I would be so nervous to get out there and get injured or drop a ball. Like, I think it would just backfire on me. That guaranteed money is like, you know that there's security there. You can relax. You can play. You can do your job, knowing that you've earned that. And it's a player friendly league. The NBA, obviously, the NFL. Why it's been so successful and why. Fans and general managers and people like that love it is because there's control there from that side of it.
You know, the counter argument, and I think there's a little bit of validity.
Is you're playing for your supper, they're motivated.
Right. And they're not going to take off years. But, like, because I
think not that many NBA guys take off years. There are guys that take off years, but not that many. Like, right. the product the NBA puts out there it's a fantastic product. Like, guys have too much pride. Like, there's a competitive element in this too. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah, I've got my money, but I'm a competitor. I still want to go out there and win. So I don't buy into that as much as other people do. I hear the argument,
right.
but I don't think it's that valid.
Right.
All right, so last one. CBS Sports polled around 26 FBS coaches to ask who they'd like to share a beer with. And Mike Leach ran away with it, 29% of the vote. A few years ago, they did it in college basketball. And CBS pulled a bunch of college basketball coaches, and Bob Huggins ran away with that. So
I love this. He's the pirate. He's the kind of, he's always off the rails. He's written a book about pirates. Like, he's always the guy who gives you the best quotes. I would say this. There probably aren't very many that I would actually want to. Unless you're like hardcore and you just want to talk to X's and O's football, a lot of these guys, that's all they know. Like, they don't know how to sit down and tell stories and talk about other things like Mike Leach does. It's more of, hey, well, I got to get back to work. Like, they're so ingrained in them.
Right.
Just football, that if you love that, and that would be fun to do for some people, but if you're thinking, hey, it's going to be a fun laugher, like great story times, a lot of times it's not what you're going to get.
Lane Kiffin?
I think he would be fun. Because I would get him a couple and have some dirt on everywhere he's been. What happened to USC? What happened to Bama? And I think he would share it.
Ed Orgeron?
Yeah, he could be fun. Now he would be a football guy, but I also could see him like taking off his shirt and doing something crazy like late night. Like just having you're jumping in going with Mike the Tiger, to challenge him in a wrestling match. Like, I could see Ed Orgeron going nuts. So there are some good ones for those reasons.
Right.
But a lot of them, like,
yeah, yeah, you're talking.
What are you going to get?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Got to bless your heart.
All right. Maybe we'll have to break down. We'll have to do a deeper dive into what you would do and what you would, like, on a night out with a coach. Like, what kind of stuff you would get to. All right. Coming up, NCAA made a rule change. I think it's a good thing, but it could be way better. We're going to delve deep into that next on Off the Bench.
And I think he has every right to do that with every coach or anybody in the organization that he has relationships with, which, you know, we certainly do quite often with all players at all positions. But, you know, look, this is probably a lot more important to people outside this organization than it is to people inside.
There's Nick Saban obviously addressing Jalen Hurts' comments from last week. You know who's important to Jalen
Hurts? Well, that's what I'm going to say. You're
right.
The fact that you would even come out and say that shows how little regard you have for, like, the individuality of the players in your program. And while your overall goal is to build the program and you shouldn't be, like, necessarily concerned with who wants to start every minute, there's certainly personal relationships that you should have, and you should care about someone's well-being to some degree. And I think him getting up there and downplaying the hell out of it like that just shows even further in my book that he gives two stuffs about Jalen Hurts and who he is as a person and what his future looks like. All he gives a damn about is Bama football. Good for you, Doug.
Right. He wants the ultimate team. Everybody buys in. It's a bunch of robots all buying into the thing. I, as much as he said it's not that big a deal, it is a big deal, and he's trying to nip it in the bud, especially at SEC Media Days. His opening comments, he didn't even take a question. He said, you guys in the media are the ones that are creating this quarterback controversy. Nope. It's a real thing, and you should be open and honest about it instead of saying it's us making it up. There is a quarterback controversy because you benched your starter at halftime in the national championship game.
Correct.
And it's a good problem to have, but it's not us making up.
No, you created that. Like, that was your decision that created that. And, right. But I get where he's coming from. Like, yeah, as the coach, you got to do that, right? I want to put this to bed. We have to move on. We have a season to play. We're the favorites again. So I do understand why Nick did it and would have probably done it the same way. Having said that, though, dude, like, when I go back to Jalen and I think about the comments that nobody even talked to the dude, no one asked him about where he was or what his, like, that's crazy to me.
Do you think Nick Saban pulled him in his office? He had to have.
After the coach?
Yes,
of course.
I would hope so. So hopefully now there is an open line of communication where they say, and I'm sure it was a one, like Nick Saban saying, hey, we thought you knew this is a competition and this is how it's going to be. But there had to have been something. You have to address it because it was the big elephant in the room.
I think it went more like, dude, don't do that again.
Yeah, that, like, probably
shut your mouth and do what you do. Jalen Hurts needs to leave.
Yeah.
Only bank player.
Man. Bye. I don't know if that's the case, but we can have that argument another time. Do moths bother you? Like, do they,
moths?
Bugs? Like, do, like,
I don't, I'm not spiders, a bug lover.
But moths, they're to me the least offensive of, like, insects.
No problem.
That do you? So this umpire the other night was in a game. And watch where this moth comes from. It was actually embedded in his, ear. Yeah, it's kind of nasty.
That would bother me.
But how does it get that far? Like, he went deep in there to get it. I mean, doesn't that affect your hearing?
Have you ever seen, like, the viral clips of people, like, pouring, like, solution in their ear?
Yeah, don't give me that.
Like, spider and stuff coming out of it?
Yeah, that's pretty nasty. You put the wax in there and suck it out. That's awful. All right, so one of the biggest stories that came out yesterday was this NCAA rule change, where there were two things that really summed it up for me, because there was a whole big, you know, release, and they put it out on their website, and it was commitment to change and all this, but there were two big things. One, the fact they're going to allow high school or college players hire an agent.
Right.
It's elite players. We'll get to that in a little bit, like, how do you determine elite? So they're going to let them hire an agent before they, you know, actually be a pro, which is a unique change. The other thing was, if they go undrafted, they can return to school, which I think is a great thing, because a lot of guys get a lot of bad information and they say, hey, I'm going to be a lottery pick. And then they don't even get drafted at all, and they're sitting there with no other option. So they're coming back to school. So I think that's a really good thing. Overall, though, I don't think this is any monumental shift in college athletics. And I think it's a step in the right direction, but I don't think it comes anywhere close to resolving any problems that the NCAA has.
No, the pay for play situation that's kind of wideswept in college sports now has not been resolved by this.
No.
Now, I think you've done a good job of, like, protecting young men's futures to some degree by having or allowing someone who's a professional in navigating those waters in terms of getting through the draft, having relationships with teams that could help Danny understand where he stands, you know, in the draft process. Like, allowing someone to help a 17 or 18 year old kid with that I think is a responsible thing by the NCAA. Certainly allowing a kid who thinks he should be drafted and isn't drafted, allowing him to come back to school is an awesome thing. Like, it does put the teams in a kind of precarious situation, because you may not know if you have an available scholarship while you're out there trying to recruit. You might have to replace your best player. You can't offer that scholarship until you're sure he's going to leave. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a little bit of cat and mouse waiting to see from the teams. They'll have to adjust, but I think it's the right call from trying to protect a player and trying to build young men and allow them to have the best potential future they can have. But again, it does not address, like, it's not going to stop a kid from, I don't know, Plantation, Florida, or somewhere like that, from taking $100K to go play in Missouri if Missouri offers him $100K.
There was a couple things I saw. First of all, like, when they said elite, like, why have a specification?
Why not anybody?
Anybody? And the NCAA, it's such a reactionary thing, because this is basically a direct reaction to the FBI investigation. It's not very proactive. It's specifically a reaction. Why is this only for basketball? Like, why not football? Like, why not have every college student athlete have the same rules across the board? Like, that to me makes no sense. The thing about the elite determination, like, who defines that? They said, we'll let USA Basketball determine that definition. USA Basketball doesn't want that responsibility. They say they weren't asked about it by the NCAA.
Right.
It's kind of comical. You look foolish at these times. And sometimes I'm like, where is the common sense from the NCAA? Why can't they just make it simpler, simplify things? The best solution, in my opinion, is to go to the baseball model. Like, just let... So you would do away with the one and done. You'd let guys go. If you're a good baseball player in high school, you can enter the draft. You can go pro. Good.
Right.
Good for you. Let that occur in football and let it occur in basketball. But if you don't, go to college. Then you're committed. You know, you can go to college. Now, if you want to have a tweak, I think 3 years is fine. If you have to commit 3 years, that's fine. If you want to make it two, so if a guy comes out and he has a great freshman year, he has to only one more year, he has to stay. But the best part about the baseball thing, too, you can actually get drafted. I don't understand why it's only if you get undrafted. What if you don't get drafted where you thought you were going to get drafted? Like, what if you're a second round pick and the money is drastically different?
Right.
Why can't you decide then to go back and increase your value the next year? Because you can increase your value in college and do it there and then go back in the next year.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me, because you would then be... That's the risk. There's got to be some gamble, right? I mean, you have kids just throwing their name in the hat everywhere, and it's just going to dilute. It's going to dilute the hell out of the
baseball
draft process, though. Like, say I'm a second round pick potentially, and you got 25 freshmen throwing their name in, and everybody's going to take a flyer on them in the second round. I could have been a second round pick, and they all wind up going back to school, and now I'm over in Europe playing. So it's going
to
have a trickle down effect
on the teams to evaluate better. And to be smarter
teams,
with their picks.
They're not going to value. Like, these teams in the NBA sat in those front offices. Talent is tantalizing, bro. Like, measurables, they can't stop. Like, it's, you know, I don't even know what the right analogy for it is, but it would be like, hey, don't touch that. And they're like, oh my God, it looks so pretty. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I gotta have it. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they can't help it. So you'll still have them swinging wildly at all of this talent, because they want the young ones. They don't want the 21-year-old senior. They don't.
But don't you think after a couple times, and maybe it takes a few years,
I guess,
they take some of these young ones, and the young one says, I thought I was going to be a lottery pick. I'm not signing for that money.
Yeah, it would
take,
it would take a while.
And they're like, uh-oh, maybe we don't take one of those young guys.
But then...
It basically, for me, it's the most player-friendly, which is I want that happen.
It is player-friendly, but the thing would be, like, you would probably keep drafting them anyway, because that's financially not on your books, right? They go back.
Right.
What have you missed? Like, you didn't miss on anything. Like, you took a flyer on the kid, you decided not to come. That's money you don't then have to spend. Like, a lot of guys don't necessarily want their second round picks to be on their team anyway, right?
Right.
They're stash
fillers.
They stash them, or they're going to bring them in for training camp and wind up doing something with them anyway. So, you know, I don't know, man. I agree with you, though. I like the baseball model. I don't know how you would implement that, how long it would take for those teams to kind of get the hang of it and do it the right way. But they do need to address the pay for play, because that's not going anywhere. And the money money in the NBA grows, as the shoe companies are making more money, as everyone is making more money, like you think the college kids aren't going to be making more money? You think people are going to stop paying them? They're going to stop paying the high school seniors?
Yeah, I disagree on the whole pay for players. Like, I don't think they should be paid by the NCAA, because I think they should pay all athletes across the board the same. Like, I think there should be some sort of structure there. But I don't want to prevent guys from making their money. That's why I would say, if you're good enough to go to the NBA out of high school, then go ahead.
Right.
That's where that's where I would like to see the change take place, as opposed to blowing up the whole NCAA system as we know it, where you get the scholarship and that's sort of your compensation. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on.
All right, well, coming up next, we got Kirk Cousins sent a tweet.
Yep.
We'll pick PGA champ. And Jaylen Brown was on with somebody saying that the Celtics are guaranteed to make the finals this year. All of that guaranteed. Coming up next on Off the Bench with Kanell and Bell.
All right, welcome back to Off the Bench. Earlier in the show, we talked about Kirk Cousins having all this pressure on him, right?
He's
got the guaranteed money.
Lambo.
Yeah, he's got the Lambo. But he's also pretty good on social media. Like, he puts a lot of stuff out there. There was a great picture of his son the other day at practice. He tweeted out something the other day, though, that caught my eye, because he said, "I guess I'm getting old. Today, a teammate said he didn't know who Cal Ripken Jr. is." What? Like, he could not believe
Cal Ripken
a teammate. Oh, stop it. Stop it. You know who Cal Ripken
Jr.
is. I know you know him. He's an icon of baseball, right?
For sure.
So, we're being hard on these younger players, his teammate that didn't know who this was. So, let's go back in time. We're going to play a little game, all right? And we're going to see how we would have done if we were in a similar situation, all right?
All right.
So, this player would have been... 17 years ago. So Cal Ripken, let's assume the player was a rookie. That's probably what it was, the Kirk Cousins guy that he was talking about. So Cal Ripken retired 17 years ago. So the kid was like 4 or 5 years old when Cal Ripken retired. So was he expected to know him? So we're actually going to test each other's knowledge about a couple guys who played 17 years before your rookie season.
Okay.
Right, Raja? So you got to tell me these dudes. What team did they play for? Jim Palmer. You remember what position he was?
A pitcher.
Yes.
Yeah. Jim Palmer, the Yankees, maybe?
It's always a solid guess. Baseball. Go to the Yankees. He was not. He was an Oriole.
An Oriole, okay.
A long time. He was like also like one of the, like, sounds kind of weird, but he was like, he was known for being one of the sexier dudes. Like, he had an underwear ad.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't know. Like, that's.
Was I supposed to know that?
No, I don't think you are. I'm still going to place him. I didn't want him to go. How about Yaz? How about Carl Yastrzemski?
Carl Yastrzemski. I want to say one of the, I want to say one of the Sox, either the Red Sox or the White Sox. I'm going to say, was it the Red Sox? No, it was Red Sox.
No, yeah, you're right. Stick with it. Yes, very done. Very well done. How about Johnny Bench?
I was a catcher, Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, you've been big red machine.
Yeah,
I remembered him being on the shows like Inside This Week in Baseball, like all those, and hosting the kids' shows, the Baseball Bunch. Like, that's where.
The Baseball Bunch.
Remember that was
a
fantastic show. They need to bring that back. Like the Basketball Bunch.
All right, so here we go. Let's go Lou Brock.
Oh, we're doing baseball guys.
Yeah.
I thought we were doing football guys.
I was doing baseball. How the hell am I going to do baseball? You're going to do football.
All right, Brock was a Cardinal, right?
Lou Brock was a Cardinal. Yep. Yeah. Catfish Hunter.
He was an Oakland A. I think that was the team he was most well known for, right?
Oakland A and a Yank.
I mean, I was going to go with the Yankees too, but I was trying to think.
Oh, look at you. But you play baseball, dude. Boom. All right. Willie McCovey.
Giants. Bam.
Whack.
Don't they call something McCovey?
Like, McCovey
out with it. Yeah, McCovey Cove.
Yeah,
there
is that
it is.
Yeah.
So you got it. Look at you even know that too.
That's bam. Dope. So you I'll beat me it. 3 for 3.
All right.
Is that a competition?
I kind of like that. Yeah. I like that. I like that game. We'll have to do more of those, test our knowledge of history, because I am not a sports buff. Like, I am not good with trivia.
I love sports trivia.
You do?
Yeah. Baseball, not my wheelhouse, but I love it.
Yeah. Look at that. So picks and props. We're going to update these. We're going to start from scratch when the season starts. We do some real things. But let's do a little golf, because we previewed a little bit the PGA Championship yesterday. We talked about Tiger. Is there anybody that you would say out of the top 10 or 12 favorites that you would put money on?
I like DJ this week, but at 8-1, I don't know that the value is there.
I would never take the favorite in golf.
Right.
Not good enough value for me.
You know who I would take? I'd take a flyer. I'd take a flyer on John Rahm at 28-1.
Down there.
Yeah. Yeah,
Arizona State grad.
Not only that, but he there was a thing I saw on him last week at Firestone where he was talking. It was a commercial where he was talking about loving the pressure and loving to kind of get in a bad situation and play his way out of it. Like, I like his mentality. I like to watch him play.
I actually did take a flyer on Tiger Woods for the British Open. He was 22-1. He's 25-1 here at the PGA Championship, but I'm not going to touch it. I'll go with Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler has been this guy who feels like he's the best player without a major next to his name.
Yeah.
It's like he's getting closer. Can he have that breakout moment? So it's kind of a sentimental pick because I like him. I want him to do well.
Right.
So I'll take a flyer.
He was getting crushed on the broadcast last week because he had a comment about saying, like, they asked him about his major situation, and he was like, you know, I'm not going to force it. Like, when it's going to come, it's going to come. And kind of really mellow about it. But, like, those dudes were not, like, Nick Faldo and them.
Right.
Were like, what do you mean you're not forcing it? That's exactly what you have to do. Like, you have to dig deep and figure it out. And I was –
There is something, and it kind of goes to guaranteed money and how motivated are you play. Ricky Fowler's made a boatload of money. He's probably one of the most marketed players on the tour. When you watch the commercials during the tournaments, he's got a really nice setup. He's got a really nice life. He's won a bunch of regular tour tournaments. So is he that like desperate to get a major? Maybe not. Yeah. And is the, like something that comes from within. Like you either have that killer instinct, I want to be the best, or I want to be really good and I can have this great life. And if I win a major, that's great. And that's to me seems more like that's his mentality.
Right.
And that can be okay too. It's just not what fans want to hear. They want to hear when you go out there and do it every single time.
Right. Right.
All right. So the Eastern Conference odds came out of who's going to win this thing. And your boy Jaylen Brown said there's no doubt about it.
Like, no doubt.
Said that you don't even need the odds. Celtics are the favorite from Vegas at plus 135. But he had a quote said, no question on CJ McCollum's podcast. No question the Celtics will make the finals in 19. I hate how everybody is like, oh, LeBron's gone in the East. I know he did have a stronghold in the East for the last 7 years, but he barely got us out there last year. Barely got us out there last year. Man, he's not beating us again. He's going all in. He's saying guaranteed.
Dog, it doesn't matter whether he barely got you out of there last year. Bull, he got you out of there. He got you and your team out of there the last couple years. That's a rat. I don't care if you won by 1 point. But I think that they're going to be in the Eastern. I think they're going to win.
You are. So you think he's right?
I think he's correct in that, yes, there's...
Guarantees don't mean anything anymore because everybody makes them.
Raptors.
It's really not as epic a deal. I know. With Kawhi. I hear you. I hear you. All right. So apparently Hannah has some socially relevant news for us that involves Kawhi Leonard.
Huh?
All right, guys, this just happened this morning. So after weeks of silence from Kawhi Leonard and his trade to the Raptors, the former San Antonio Spurs forward has finally said goodbye to the organization and his fans. So here's a little bit of what he had to say. He said, quote, I've been going back and forth the last few weeks trying to figure out the right things to say, and it comes down to two simple words. Thank you. He continued by honoring Greg Popovich, saying, quote, I'll always be grateful for my growth under your guidance. While I'm looking forward to the next chapter in my career, I'll always remember the city and the people of San Antonio. So, guys, it has been 3 weeks since he left. Does this still feel genuine to you?
That does not feel genuine. I'm glad you said genuine because it was the word that does not feel genuine. Like, dude, by almost everyone's account except your own, you wanted to leave San Antonio for a bigger market. You were not. If you really loved that place, you'd have been with Pop and them last year. Whether you could play or not, you would have been around the team. You would have been hanging out with those people. You would be doing what people who love each other do, spending time with them. You chose not to do that. You were somewhere else doing your rehab. All of that spoke to you not really getting down with the organization and the people in it. So I don't buy that, Kawhi. While I didn't hold it against you, the wanting to leave if you were injured and stuff like that, this one doesn't feel real to me, partner.
No, to be honest with you, I actually thought that the statement was done when it said, I've been searching for all these words and I found the right ones. Thank you. I thought that was going to be at the end of it. Like, I thought that would have been perfect because he never speaks. And
right.
Say a whole lot. But that is totally a statement that's been thought out, planned, and probably sent out by his agent and his people, and not Kawhi.
They're trying
to
rehab.
Right thing to do. Yeah, they're trying to rehab his image, which they need to do. The best thing for him, though, is to get back on the court, start playing again, and people will forget about this part of his career.
Right.
All right, guys, on a much lighter note, imagine just hanging out, enjoying your Saturday morning, and you suddenly get a direct deposit for $154,000. That's what happened to Thomas Fleetwood. He is a 58-year-old gentleman living in Florida. His friend tweeted out a screenshot of the wire transfer. I guess it pays to have the exact same name as a PGA pro. So, Danny, Raja, this guy needs to get the Good Samaritan Star Award for the year, right?
Yeah, dog, what are you, like,
I wouldn't have told anybody. I'm not sending any tweets. I'm keeping it under wraps. I might even move it out of that account.
Damn right.
Another one.
On the Caymans. We're dropping that in offshore, dog. Exactly. What are you thinking?
How crazy would that be, though, to all of a sudden open your account, it's 100 grand richer. And it's funny because in the list of transactions, it's like Walmart, $16, like getting gas for 10 bucks. And then all of a sudden, 100K dropped in there. But what are you thinking? No, good for him. He did the right thing. I'll have to teach my daughters that one. I can use that as an example of what you should do. Say, here, guys, this is what you should do.
All right, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure, every time. Hannah would be out there in South Beach spending it all.
No, I would not. All right, guys, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Canel and Bell. Danny, what's coming up next?
All right, it must be a season to, like, players call out what happened last year and guarantees for next year because Alvin Kamara, he said something that I totally disagree with. That's coming up next in Topics.
All right. Welcome back. Let's get into a segment we call Topics, Danny. Let's go from the top. Alvin Kamara had some comments. Obviously, the Saints lost to the Vikings in the divisional round of last year's playoffs with the Minneapolis Miracle. He says if they had won, they would have advanced to the Super Bowl, even though the Vikes lost 38-7 to Philly. Kamara said yesterday, we'd beat the shit out of the Eagles because we was rolling. If we won, I knew nobody was going to stop us because we came all the way back.
I mean, if he's your teammate, you love him, you ride or die, like it's all good. But why say that? Why bring it up now? And you were right. Like, you first of all, you should have taken out the Vikings. You were one play away, and Stephon Diggs, you know, the miracle in Minneapolis, is the rest is history. But what good does this do to go out there and say this? Like, it doesn't do any good to go out there and do this.
It's the same thing that Jaylen Brown just had a minute ago, bro. If ifs was a fifth, we'd all be drunk.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean? Like, I love my little Miami-isms, bro. I learned all these when I got here at 13 years old, so they still fascinate me.
But it
didn't go down like that, bro. Right. Just let it ride.
Right, exactly. Just let it go. Let it go. Do it on the field.
Yeah.
What happens, like, the Eagles, tip your cap to them. Why take away from what they did?
Right.
I get it. You're bitter. I get it. You didn't get there. You didn't get your opportunity. But let sleeping dogs lie.
Correct.
All right, next up, Joakim Noah. He's been all over the place, right? He's out in the jungle, like giving words of wisdom from the jungle. He's training in Hawaii. The other day, he was actually caught by TMZ. He was changing his drawers in the middle of like Beverly Hills, like on the side of the road, and they caught him butt naked.
Yeah.
Not like keep your boxers on changing, buck naked, like trying to cover up. But he also, so he might, maybe he's out there shopping in Beverly Hills for a new team because it looks like the reports are coming out that the Knicks plan to use the stretch provision to waive the 12-year NBA vet. After they signed him, this massive deal was one of Phil Jackson's genius moves. Hey, he's a genius coach, but not so much as a front office guy. 4 years, $72 million deal he had under Phil Jackson.
Joakim Noah is a really interesting cat. A little weird, maybe off the beaten path, but a good dude.
Yeah.
Like, and there was a time where he was as invaluable.
Him well?
I don't know him well. I know him to, you know,
kick
it and talk to him a little bit, but not like in numbers in our phone type of situation. But he's a good dude. And at one point was as invaluable to like a franchise there in Chicago as there was a guy in the NBA. I mean, he was an all-star. Guy could do a little bit of everything. That didn't do anything excellent except really like defend and rebound and he was a quarterback of your defense, kind of like Tyson Chandler was, but more skilled than Tyson Chandler. That contract that Phil Jackson gave him was one of the worst contracts, like, ever. I think he had just come off an injured season. The tread was already looking like it was thin on the tires. And so he's the type of dude that he's banked a whole lot of money. Maybe, I don't know, I've seen some videos of him this summer. Maybe, just maybe, he's a minimum guy that helps someone get over the hump, like a good backup defensive-minded dude for one of these like teams that are knocking on the door. I mean, I could see him. I could see like a Golden State situation for him. Their roster's already probably completely full, but that type of situation for Joakim, because he could still mentally get the job done. Physically, there are some issues now, though.
I can't stand him. You know why? Because he played at Florida.
I watched him win
those national championships with Florida. I couldn't, but I also do feel like he's the player that he's one of those guys, and it's such a cliche, but it's true. If he's on your team, you love him. But if you're playing against him, he's that nuisance, the guy who's not afraid to get dirty, to, you know, get in the scrum.
Yeah, totally.
Talk a lot of trash, just be annoying. But if I have the feeling if he was on my team, I would probably like him. And like to hang out with him because he is a different dude.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. Yeah. And good dude to hang out with, too.
Yeah.
You hang out with him in Chicago one night, one summer. He's a good dude. All right. Anyway.
What happened in Chicago one night?
No, we were there for a golf trip, man. We do a guy's trip like every summer.
Yeah.
Me and my buddies went to Chicago. We hit Wrigley Field and did all the stuff. And then we ran into Joakim Noah one night in some underground place. We had a good time.
All right. Yeah, good. Good to know.
All right. So we
about to get the details off air.
We've seen pro athletes dress in disguise and not have fans recognize them, right? But what about their own teammates? That's what happened at their training camp. So backup quarterback Chase Daniel was asking starting quarterback Mitch Trubisky for an autograph. Trubisky had no clue. To be fair, Daniels has had a pretty forgettable career. So what do you think about that?
All right, I'm jealous of a lot of people, but maybe none more so than Chase Daniel. Do you realize how much money he has made, and he has played hardly any snaps? I'm not even talking games.
I didn't even know his name.
He was quarterback at Mizzou. Like, he had a good, nice little career. I honestly thought when he was at Mizzou, I thought maybe he'll get a chance in camp and he might get some opportunities, some looks. The Eagles signed him to a $21 million. He was making $7 million a year as a backup quarterback in the NFL, and he still had never played in the NFL.
It's the best job in sports.
You can't even find his stats online for how many games he's played. So he's had how many attempts do you think he's attempted in his
how many
career?
Years
Pass
how
attempts.
Many years has he been in?
He's been in 7 years. This is his eighth year.
50.
So he's completed 51. Okay. 51 of 78 for one touchdown and one interception. And he's translated that into millions and millions of dollars. The guaranteed money from Philadelphia was $7 million. That's why I knew that was the money that he got. Jesus. And kudos to him. Like, I am a hater, though, because he's got all this. That was hilarious because nobody knew who he was. And he has this bucket hat on where you couldn't really see him. But he went around to a bunch of dudes. Some of them caught him, like a couple of his offensive linemen. Caught him and was like, hey, I'm not signing. Like, they caught him.
Right.
But, like, it just speaks volumes to how you can be this anonymous dude and walk around and they're screaming fans just kind of fly under the radar.
Mitch was in classic, like, you know, it's training camp.
Right. You go into the zone.
He's not even looking. He's just signing and moving. I actually liked the interaction with fans.
Yeah,
I did. I like to get over there and talk a little junk, and I'd hop over and take selfies and stuff. There was a fan.
Even in camp?
Even in camp, dude. I liked the interaction. I was very appreciative of the fact that I had a fan.
Yeah.
A single fan. So anybody that wanted my autograph, like, I was like, this is cool, dude. Like I told the USBL story yesterday.
Yeah.
From where I came from, like, it was all, that was all good with me. There was a dude in Sacramento, when you play Sacramento, he would come and they'd make you like artwork of like all of your like Topps cards or your Fleer cards or whatever they are, right? Mm-hmm. And he put together like frames worth of all of your cards and stuff for you. And year after year, they'd bring you something, and they'd want you to send them something back. Like, or he'd want my shoes or something. I'd be like, dude, I can't get you my shoes. I like to wear shoes out. Like,
right.
I wore them until the tread was gone off of them. And he was like, hey, man, can I give you my address? Will you send it for me? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, dude, you're never going to send them. And I actually sent him a pair of shoes, dude. The next time I saw that dude, like, I made his year.
Right.
Like, and they were just my shoes. They weren't like I gave him Steve Nash's shoes. But the fact that someone took the time to actually send him something and was appreciative of like all the time he spends making the art, it meant a lot to the dude. So I always enjoyed that.
The bottom line is those fans are why players make so much money.
Yeah.
And it's really easy just to make them feel special for a second.
For sure.
Just even to say, hi, how are you doing? Like, just smooth it. Like, it's so easy. It doesn't take a lot of effort. And yet some guys don't do it. And it's very frustrating, but they should. You know the Jordans I wore yesterday?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure they were real. Like, I think they were. I found them online.
The threes?
But I think they were real. But there was actually, this is what made me nervous, is when you see stories like this. So there were five people were charged in trafficking fake Air Jordans worth over $70 million. Mm. They face a maximum of 20 years in prison. So how many pairs of shoes could you get for $70 million? 27,000 pairs of Jordans you could get.
How much?
Like, how can you tell, too? Like, you know,
I have
like,
no idea.
Remember the fake Rolexes?
Yeah.
You can tell because the ticker
on
the hand.
Canal Street and stuff.
Yeah,
I still don't know.
The ticker wasn't smooth.
The big thing for me now is spotting fake Cohibas. Like, I need to know. Like, because everybody's, like, representing, like, this is a Cohiba. And I learned how to spot the fakes. Like, the dots aren't, like... Like
really?
Straight lines are not linear.
I don't know this.
Like,
I gotta get in on that.
Yeah, big market for like for trafficking.
Heck yeah, absolutely
stuff
there are. I need to know. Like, is there a stamp? I need to figure it out so I can make sure my other ones are real. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Another episode of Off the Bench. We're gonna do a bonus pod. We're gonna do that right after this. We're gonna record it. So check it out. It'll be out by noon today. We're gonna do a little Last Chance U, which was renewed for another season. I was a little bit surprised at that, and we'll get a little bit more in depth into why I think that. In our bonus pod. But we'll be back tomorrow. As always, check us out on Instagram and Twitter @Kinnell and Bell.